This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello everyone, I'm Chris Wynn and welcome to the Rocky Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen, where we once again build up to our next League One fixture as we still sit at the top of the league table. And ahead of our next fixture at Fleetwood Town for his second appearance on the Rocky Report podcast, we are very pleased to be joined by the chairman of our next opponents, which is of course Andy Pilley. Welcome Andy.
Thank you very much, Chris.
How are you keeping, Andy? You okay?
Really good, thank you, Chris, yes.
Yeah, good stuff. And it's been a while. The last time we caught up was almost a year ago, back in November 2020, which was, of course, in the middle of a strange season behind closed doors. And we talked in depth then about the financial kind of aspects, you know, that kind of damage that was being inflicted on the Football League clubs due to fans not being able to attend. And again, I've saw since that you're still kind of making comments about making football more sustainable. I mean, obviously, since we spoke, there's been a lot of discussion, but I mean, from my point of view, you're obviously more in the mix, but a lot of it seems like it's been brushed under the carpet since then. Is that how you see things, or are talks still ongoing?
Well, I am disappointed that there was not more of a rescue package put forward from the government and the powers that be, perhaps the Premier League. I felt it was their duty to, perhaps their obligation to assist in their hour of need. The vast majority of the Premier League clubs have spent time in the EFL. And to have such a long, sustained period of time without supporters and without any form of revenue has really, really hurt. I think there's a misconception for many football supporters out there, and probably from the general media, that all is well and that football is back as it was. But that is not the case. And really all that's happened, and this is not just a Fleetwood issue, is debt has just been really kicked down the alley. And the vast majority of clubs have got obligations to HMRC. And it's been a very, very tough time. So HMRC has probably become the unofficial rescue package. And it's been a tough 12, 18 months. My job as Fleetwood chairman is to ensure that there remains a football club in this area. It brings a great deal of quality of life and pleasure to the local community, a great deal of pride when we do well. And I must do all I can to continue that at as high a level as I possibly can.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, last time we talked about it, we were right in the thick of that season. I think things were pretty raw when we were talking about it. But now it's, you know, we're into that next season. We can kind of look back at it a bit. But how do you look back now from a Fleetwood point of view in how you dealt with it as a club? Because you've just mentioned that community side of it. Were you able to keep all, you know, as much of that as possible going to help the community while you were also dealing with all of the trouble that the pandemic kind of inflicted on the club?
It's very difficult to, I mean, we did our very best and ourselves, like many EFL clubs, we did contact our supporters and we tried to remain engaged with them and to maintain their positivity in this most testing of times. But there's nothing quite like going to the game. is my opinion. And, you know, the when you score a goal, when you win a game, even just the general atmosphere and the pleasure that a football match brings, we were no longer able to deliver. So we did our very best, and that's all we could do at that difficult time.
Do you still feel like you're dealing with the you know, the mess that the past 18 months has kind of left behind?
Well, I think every club, what happens in the pre-season, you make a decision as to what your aspirations are for the forthcoming season. And my decision was that we're going to cut the wage bill. We'd back the previous manager significantly. We still have a healthy wage bill, but we went for promotion under Joey Barton. We brought in fairly big name players for a club the size of Fleetwood. And certainly in my opinion, we had a right go. What we're doing now is we still want sporting success. We still want to win every game. Of course we do. But also what we want to do is we want to create some asset value. We want to be that club that can really get the benefit of the fantastic sports complex that we have as our training ground. We believe it's a Premier League setup we have. We've got 13 pitches and you name it, we've got it, really at our training ground. So we're attracting really, really good young players, and the intention is to give them a dose of a chance in first team football this season. And we do believe that they're good enough to still obtain the sporting success that we long for. So really how I'm looking to measure success this season, win as many games as we can. We want to finish top half, top 10. It's my belief that there will be probably six or seven clubs that you can name right now that will be at the very top of the division, and probably a mini league of 12 clubs below that. And if we can feature at the top of that 12 clubs, then I think we'll have done quite well.
Yeah. And you mentioned the training ground there. I was reading kind of, you know, off the pitch. You've just opened a large facility, you know, that can host around 400 people in an outdoor settings, you know, people, yeah, dining facilities. I read that you're going for a Category 2 class academy at the club. So it seems like, you know, you've gone in a slightly, obviously, a certain direction on the pitch, but off the pitch, it seems like things are really progressing still.
Very much so, Chris, yeah. I think in business, you always have to make a decision as to what your business model is going to be. And we're probably best described as a disruptor at this level of football. We're a very, very small town. We've got a population of circa 25,000 people. And we clearly do punch above our weight by going toe-to-toe with clubs like Sunderland and Ipswich and Sheffield Wednesday. And, you know, certainly fairly regular occasions historically. We've managed to get results against Sunderland. So we do okay. But what I've got to look to, I've got to look to the future. And I don't think it's right that any football club should be reliant on any one individual putting money in. And so I've got to aim to make the club sustainable. So the best way to do that is to trade well the commodities that you're dealing. The commodities that we deal in as a football club is players. So it's about getting the best young players in. We just have planning permission for an indoor dome as well. Work will start on that in November. So we have got a truly outstanding sports complex training ground, and we want to develop those stars for the future. We want to give them game time. We want to shake their hands, and we want to move them on again and watch them on Match of the Day on a Saturday night. But we also, I want that spring in my step on a Saturday night when we've got 3 points and when we've been successful on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, well, ideally you want to see them on a Wednesday night at the Nou Camp after you've just sold them for tens of millions.
Well, indeed, absolutely, yeah.
But, yeah, as I said, we kind of spoke late in November of last year, but it was only 6 weeks after we spoke, 4th of January this year. It was after a run of one win in 8 games, which actually started with the fixture that we were previewing when we last spoke, which ended ones each. You parted ways with Joey Barton as manager, who's obviously one of favourite of Sunderland fans, of course. but listening back to when we spoke, you were talking about, you know, you'd known him for a long time before he came manager, you know, when he came to the club and he was training with the club, and, you know, you went over to visit with him in France and things like that. And kind of considering you'd just lost out on the playoffs, and at the time, Fleetwood were on the same points as Sunderland at the time, actually sitting 3 points outside the playoffs. That must have been a really kind of tough call to make, you know, on a personal level and kind of professional level as well.
It was. It was really tough. I've got a lot of time for Joey as a person, and I backed him significantly for a club the size of Fleetwood. But he was there for 2.5 years. He was with us for 2.5 years. When I look back, his tenure was a success. Not many rookie managers get 2.5 years. He got us to the playoffs, and we did pretty damn well. We really did. He gave a lot of youngsters their debuts, but I felt we'd lost our way. I felt that it was no longer a happy camp, and if it's not a happy camp, then I don't believe you're going to get the results that you need. And as owner, you have to make those big calls sometimes, and that's part and parcel of the role that I have. I believe that if I can put my hand on my heart and I can look at myself in the mirror, and if I can say, I might not always get these decisions right, but I'll always do them, do what I consider to be for the very best of the football club. That's all I can do. And I've no regrets. I think it was the right thing to do with hindsight. We brought in another big favourite at Sunderland, Simon Grayson. I've got to say it's working out really well. Simon's got a much smaller wage bill at his disposal. He gets the business model. He understands that we want to win games, but we also want to give some of the younger players a chance. We want to develop some asset value. And after a tricky start, some tough fixtures, we're turning a corner.
Yeah, and I mean, just going back to obviously when you made that kind of huge decision, you know, I mean, speaking from Sunderland fans' point of view, there's been many times over the years where we've changed managers, like, you know, pair of trousers, because it's been an unhappy camp. But I mean, on the day, the statement that you put out, you said how grateful you were, as you've just said to Joey Barton. And Joey Barton, in his statement with the LMA, talked very highly of Fleetwood and you as well, you know, in terms of giving him that opportunity with that initial statement that he put out. Were you kind of slightly disappointed that it seemed like every time he spoke after that point, he seemed to hint that there was an issue here or something wrong there? Or do you accept that's just part of the media game that seems to be played in these instances?
I think you should always leave somewhere with an elegant exit if it's at all possible. I think if you're going to be a football manager for a long time, you have to live in the real world, and you have to understand that there's more than a strong likelihood. It's almost inevitable that you're going to get sacked at some point. There's not many managers get a gold carriage clock at the end of a 40-year career. Football just doesn't work like that. So you've got to face the reality of it. I treated him very well, and I think I gave him an opportunity when many people wouldn't. And, you know, from my point of view, publicly, I'll always thank him for everything he did. If he felt it was unjust, that's his opinion. But football is a cruel game, and not always, you know, people don't always get what they may consider they should. Ultimately, someone's got to make those decisions. That was me. And as I say, the decision I made, I still consider this to be the right one in the best interest of the club.
Yeah. And like you said, you eventually went for Simon Grayson towards the end of January. And I read as well that in one interview, you said you were absolutely kind of swamped with CVs sent from all over the world that you had to sift through. And you said, and I think you said at the time as well, how important it was to get that appointment right because of obviously the timing and the direction you wanted to take the club as well. But I mean, in terms of those CVs, Simon Grayson obviously has 4 promotions from League One on his CV. I mean, was that the thinking behind it in terms of kind of almost seeing him as a specialist in what you wanted to achieve?
I think it was a huge factor, Chris. Definitely. Whenever you're looking to fill a position in whatever the sector is, you're looking for a proven track record. And I appreciate Simon. Didn't have a great time at Sunderland. I think it was probably a tough gig at your place, whoever came in. I'm not sure it was quite a poison chalice, but probably not far off, really, with the momentum that was actually in the building at that time. And equally, Bradford and Blackpool. Sometimes you've got to go to a club at the right time. I do believe that we are a pretty stable football club, and I've been chairman now for 17 years. I took over when I was 34, so I know the place inside out. And I do believe in longevity. I believe in continuity. I think that's probably known throughout football, and that's probably why there was a lot of people who applied for the job, because I don't enjoy the process of changing manager. I don't think it's in the best interest of the club. Very often, it's only if things are really on a downward spiral and you cannot resolve it, and you think you cannot sit down and talk it through and find some common ground, that you have to go through it. So I think managers they look for. They look for facilities. They look for, is there enormous pressure and expectancy? There probably isn't at Fleetwood because we punch above our weight. And it's not one of those clubs whereby you must get promoted. And if you are unsuccessful for 3 months, then you're not going to see Christmas. If you can manage up as well as manage down, if you can win games and really win games that perhaps people wouldn't expect us to win, then there's every chance you're going to get a couple of years at least.
Yeah, and we said, you know, you took those kind of 4 weeks to really kind of try and get that right appointment. I mean, by that time, you know, for probably multiple reasons, you kind of slipped down to 14th by the time Simon Grayson came in, and then you finished the season in 15th, which was the lowest league position since 2016. I mean, was that, you know, the upheaval of changing manager, did you kind of just write off last season where you just thought, right, the rest of the season we're going to devote to transition to where Simon Grayson wants to take the club?
What happened is we had downward momentum, and momentum in football is huge. And whether it be upwards or whether it be downwards, Simon's job was to turn us around, really, because we were something like 3 points off the playoffs when Joey departed. And we again felt it was the right thing to do, but we had to really turn around that downward momentum. We were on an awful run. Simon steadied the ship. And we got a few loan players in. We brought a few youngsters into the first team. And that's what it was about. It was about maintaining the divisional status. It was about building again for this year. We also lost what I consider to be two of the best forwards in the league. We lost Chet Evans and Paddy Madden prior to Simon coming in. And that was pretty much a hammer blow because your forwards, I do believe, very often will turn a loss into a draw or a draw into a win. So that didn't make Simon's job any easier when he actually came in.
Yeah, I mean, and I want to talk about the transfer business that you got done in the summer in a second, but it seemed like a really, well, from an outsider like myself, it seemed like a really strange transfer window. I mean, do you think clubs were really wary of jumping in this summer with kind of uncertainty on what would happen over the months ahead? I mean, did that make things difficult?
I think what we were looking for more than ever is we were looking for players that we're going to play 35, 40 games. We're looking for value for money. We're looking for players who wanted to join us really for the right reasons, not just because it was their last payday. You do, of course, need a couple of more senior players. But we looked at various factors, and the players that we brought in, there was a lot of careful consideration. There was lots and lots of meetings. And I'm confident. I think we're going to surprise people, and I think that I think we can finish in the top half comfortably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, three of those players who you brought in, you brought, you know, a lot of experience. Tom Clark, Joe Garner, who both played under Grayson at Preston, and Anthony Pilkington. I mean, they were all 33 years old, and you brought them in, and you've mentioned already the amount of young players that you're trying to bring through. So, was that a conscious decision to bring in players with that sort of experience to help those young lads come through?
Well, very much so, yeah. The team is predominantly young, apart from those three players. I mean, I say it's young, but I mean, we have players who are 23, 24 years old who've played an awful lot of football, and your Callum Camps and Jordan Rossiter. Mm-hmm. Players like that, Alex Cairns, for example, take our goalkeeper, I think it's about 26, 27, good 200 games behind him. So they are the outliers in the squad. But we do have, I think, that nice blend. We've got a couple of, we've got three or four, in fact, really quite raw development players who've come through from the academy who are lighting us up recently. They're doing really, really well. And it feels like we've got a good mix.
Yeah, and another part of the market as well I'm quite kind of interested in is the loan market. And I noticed you've brought two players in from Premier League under 23 squads. You've also brought in, I saw Callum Johnson from Portsmouth, who looked like it was essentially brought in to replace another new signing, Brad Halliday, who unfortunately ruled out for the majority of this season. But I think most clubs have tried to fill their matchday quota of the five loan players on the books. Is that something you try to avoid with, you know, kind of January in mind, or was it just kind of availability of the targets that was preventing you from doing that?
Well, historically, we've always took our five loan players. And we've always really made a decision that we want to ensure that they are players that we think are better than the players that we've already got in the building, because we do not want to bring blockers in. We don't want to go and just develop other people's players and to ignore the talent that we have within the football club. And we've done that quite successfully historically. I mean, when I cast my mind back to the season that we got into the playoffs, the players that we brought in were really, really good players, in my opinion. This season, what we've done is we didn't want to bring in players for the sake of it. So we've only brought in players that we think will make a difference over the squad, over the course of the season, into the squad. And subsequently, we've still got space for another couple come January, should we require them.
One of the reasons I asked, I'm always quite interested because every club seems to have a different idea on that loan market. And for the first time, Sunderland have filled that quota. So it's always interesting to hear, you know, people's views on that loan market. But yeah, I mean, looking at the players who've left the club, it looks on paper when I was looking at the list of players who've left that actually, as you said earlier on as well, you've been able to trim the numbers of the squad down. I counted 9 who've left on free transfers. I mean, there might be more that I've missed. But I mean, the main departure looked to be Wes Burns, who had been a big part of the side for the last 4 years. Was that a disappointment that he left to join Ipswich?
I think Wes had been really good for us. And I think we'd been really good for Wes. But I think things do run their course after a period of time. And Wes has family who are down south. We got offered a reasonable fee and we accepted that fee. And so, again, it comes back to acting in the best interest of the football club. And we also have got a player who plays in that position who we think is really, really exciting. And well, he's done really well so far this season. Unfortunately, he was injured at the weekend and hopefully maybe back on Saturday. But that was also a factor.
Yeah. And it always seems in the modern day that it's always an undisclosed fee. That's a modern part of football, but there you go. So, I mean, overall, are you kind of pleased with the business you've done in the summer? And do you think you're better equipped for this season than you were for last season?
Pleased because the uncertainty of the post-pandemic, or hopefully it's post-pandemic world, means that we have to, for me, the right thing to do was to trim the squad. I mean, again, I look at the League One table this year, and I look at you guys, I look at Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday, Charlton, Portsmouth, Rotherham. There's some really, really big clubs in the division this season. There really is. And I think it's going to be hard for us to really compete right up there, numbers-wise anyway. It would be almost reckless of me to throw in the kind of money that I believe we would need to get right up there challenging for what's an automatic promotion. I think we can be that disruptor who can surprise people. If we can get that positive momentum, then I think we can get into the top 10 and who knows, maybe even into the playoffs. But it's important for us this year that we do give younger players a chance, that we create asset value, but we also must win football games because that's what it's all about.
Obviously, going into this season, this is your 8th season in League One. You've lost out in the playoffs twice in that time, but like I said, last season was the lowest bar that season in 2016. I mean, on the face of it, you've kind of already mentioned that kind of second group, but maybe with the fans as well, if you take that into account, what is the expectation now for Fleetwood Town? Would you say you're in a big period of transition where you're coming out of those kind of pushes for the top 6 and you're trying to do that in a different way?
I think the expectation is that we can finish mid-table and hopefully in the top half. I think the fans would share my expectations, certainly the realistic ones. And you have to be realistic because the best players will go to the biggest clubs with the biggest crowds and, of course, the best wages. And so it's always going to be an uphill struggle in that respect. You look at any league in any pyramid, really, and it tends to be that. The players will go to the clubs that are paying the most wages. And I always think as an owner, there is a league table which is published, which is, I think it's confidential, but it actually goes out to each and every club and it tells you where you sit within the league with your budget that you've submitted to the EFL. And so let's say, for example, say we're 12th. If we can finish any higher than 12th, then I think that's success. If we're 6th and then on the budget and we're finishing 18th, then I'm not very happy. So you have to try and overachieve where you lie in that budget league table.
Yeah, and you can probably see where the disappointment was coming from Sunderland fans over the last few years, but that's a different kettle of fish, that one. Looking at this season again, you lost the first four games of the season. There was a defeat at Stoke in the League Cup, but the three League One fixtures that ended in defeat, Portsmouth at home, followed by Lincoln and Sheffield Wednesday away. I mean, that's a tough set of fixtures to start with on paper. They were all close defeats, all by a single goal. Did you deserve more out of those first three games?
I think we seem to master the art of narrow defeats, which is not a good art to master. I mean, Portsmouth fans, by their own admission, knew they got away with a robbery. We had lots and lots of chances. We didn't take them, particularly in the first half. And they got a goal pretty much on the break. We couldn't score. Stoke away is very, very hard. Went down 2-1 there. Lincoln, we conceded a penalty in the last few minutes, probably 88th minute, lost 2-1. And Sheffield Wednesday, 1-0 away at Sheffield Wednesday. There's no disgrace there. You know, we were playing 15, 16 years ago, five leagues below the Football League. So to go down one goal at Hillsborough is not bad. Again, we were starting to get that downward momentum. And though we have an exciting crop of young players, my concern, the manager's concern was, are they going to start to doubt themselves? Are they going to start to just to lose that confidence that is required to win football games? But we went on, we beat Cheltenham, which was a really, really important result to get points on the board. A tricky fixture away at Plymouth. We drew 1-1, which was it's a really good point, I think. I mean, Plymouth beat Sheffield Wednesday in the weekend. Comfortably 3-0. And great results on Saturday, winning 4-2 away at Rotherham. And we showed real character there because we had a harsh penalty against us right on the blow at half-time. And many Fleetwood teams in the past would have felt sorry for themselves there and probably would have lost the game. But thankfully, we rolled our sleeves up, we kept believing in ourselves and we were really good value for an excellent result.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the loss, win, draw, you know, it's been a season of two halves already. But I mean, it was an improvement in performance that ran in parallel with the results, or did you just start getting a bit of a kind of rub of the green?
Well, bizarrely, I think the first game we won, which was against Cheltenham, was probably our worst performance in the season. You know, it's just sometimes you do get the rub of the green, and that's definitely what happened. And we got 3 points on the board and the world's a better place. And we're bouncing into the next game and we're pretty upbeat right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're unbeaten in four, including the Papa John's trophy against Leicester under-23s. But considering the run you're on, combined with the fact that you're at home this weekend, is it a case of, you know, just kind of you fancy yourself against anyone at the moment?
Yeah, I think we do. I've got what I consider to be a barometer built in. I can feel the mood. I can measure the mood within the training ground. And the mood is confident right now. We're in a good place. Big smiles on the face and buoyant. So, you know, we'll have a good go. We know how good Sunderland are. They're not top of the league for no reason. And it's something that we're really, really looking forward to.
And, I mean, for the travelling Sunderland fans, what type of game should we be expecting from this Fleetwood side? Because as you've mentioned, we've had some pretty tough games, pretty rough games, but you know, in the last couple of seasons, you know, Fleetwood have always been kind of in our faces, on the front foot, pressing from the off. Is this a different Fleetwood side that we're going to face on Saturday?
I think it is slightly different, but it's very, very hard working. It's maybe not quite as Joey Barton as you described. We've got pace, we've got skill up front, we've got really, really good midfielders, and we don't concede many. I think we'll give anybody in this division a really good game, and I think we've proved that so far throughout the campaign.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be half as much shouting from Sunderland fans to the Fleetwood bench that's for sure.
Yeah, we can assure that.
But yeah, I was again looking at your games, and I noticed the goals have been seemingly kind of spread out across the Fleetwood squad so far. So who should we be wary of on Saturday? Who's going to be the danger men for Fleetwood?
Probably recently Callum Morton has been excellent. I don't know how much you know about Callum Morton. He's on loan from West Brom. He was at Northampton a couple of years ago on loan, did really, really well in the playoffs. And he was one of the main reasons for their promotion. Went to Lincoln last year, got injured, but he's a real player, Callan. He's very, very mobile, real goal threat. I think he's got 4 in the last 2. So he's in a good vein of form. And again, our midfield is very strong. I think Callum Cams, Jordan Rossita, Jay Mattetti. We've got an array of talent in midfield. We're a solid, hard-working team.
Yeah, obviously, you know, kind of big game. And I think the last couple of seasons, well, not last season, obviously, but it's always a good trip to Fleetwood. And I was looking at the ticketing on the Sunderland website. And from a Sunderland point of view, the game's a sellout. And I imagine it was great to get back against Portsmouth at the beginning of August. But it's games like Saturday that, you know, it's exactly what we were missing out on last season. And it's kind of great to be back and watching games like this.
Well, first of all, what I would say is I really, really wish there was more of your guys coming, because the revenue is gratefully received. But equally, we want to see a football stadium with as much atmosphere as we possibly can. But our ground is not big. I'm sure, you know, everybody who's been will be aware of that. We're very, very landlocked, and we can only make the best of the facilities that we've got. But I share your comments entirely. It's just so good to see fans back in stadiums. It was an awful, awful year. I mean, I was fortunate enough to go to games, but it just wasn't the same. It was almost boring. When you scored, it didn't feel the same excitement as it normally does. And just to have the colour and the noise, the supporters back in, it's appreciated more than ever now.
Yeah, and it was typical Sunderland to go all the way to Wembley and then win there without any fans there. It was typical Sunderland. But
second home.
Yeah, and I'm sure, actually, I was going to say as well, with Sunderland fans, I'm sure there'll be, as Sunderland fans do, there'll be plenty going without a ticket. So I'm sure the local pubs in and around the ground will be doing a fair trade during the game as well. But on Saturday as well, I mean, I'm not 100% sure if Kirill Lewis-Dreyfus is going to be there for the game. You made the trip north just after the takeover went through back in February. So have you already had a chance to meet and catch up with our new owner?
I've met him over Teams, and I've got to say, I was really, really impressed. He was a charming, intelligent guy, it really was. I think he's involved in Sunderland for really, really for the right reasons. And I think he's an incredible owner, the very best that Sunderland could have hoped for. I think Sunderland are very, very lucky as a club to have somebody like that as the owner.
Yeah, it was partly interested because I can't imagine, there's not many 23-year-olds around the table when the EFL owners get
to. No, well, absolutely. I was 34 when I took over, and I thought that was pretty good. But 23 is ridiculously young, so every credit.
Yeah. One thing he's dealing with, actually, which I'm looking to kind of pick your brains on a little bit, he's dealing with at Sunderland, and it's a big talking point up here. And actually, I read earlier on that it's a big talking point at Manchester City. Sunderland have made a recent decision to go completely cashless in and around the ground. And they've made a decision to only provide tickets online rather than physical tickets from the ticket office. And there's been a lot of stories causing issues with those who don't have access to purchase tickets or still want to use cash. You know, there's a lot of kind of elderly people who just want to maybe walk up to the club on a Saturday, buy a ticket and, you know, to just go straight into the ground. And some of them are almost saying, well, I'm kind of giving up on them because I can't do that anymore. I mean, how difficult is it for club owners and to try and move a club forward, but to take into consideration you're the hope for the community and you've got to stay as inclusive as you possibly can?
Well, I mean, first of all, the cashless conversation is something that I'm very familiar with because we have actually made the exact same decision. And for a variety of reasons, really. The reasons are that it's very, very important for us as a club is speed of service. We want to be able to ensure that people can get into the ground as quickly as they possibly can. There's lots of problems that you can probably only relate to if you actually run a football club or work at a football club. I mean, the time spent with floats, and you'll get a call on a radio saying you're running out 50p on one side of the ground and someone's got to run around with a bag and then you're cashing up. And I mean, we've had 2 occasions whereby we've been broken into, whereby people have been attempting to steal the takings. And these have been serious professional burglaries with like angle grinders and circular saws breaking into safes, and they've done an awful lot of damage just trying to get the takings. And we do relate to the concerns. I think I can cast my mind back to there was a time whereby we used to let people walk up and pay cash on the turnstiles. And we had a similar uproar, really, when we stopped doing that. We said, look, you've got to buy a ticket now because we're now in the Football League. You can't just walk up with your £5 note or £10 note or whatever it is now and just get in. We had a little cash box behind the turnstiles and people running around with money everywhere. So I relate to it being a time of change, but I do think that I do believe that virtually everybody has some form of bank card. And if they don't, they have a friend who can assist them with it. And hopefully we can get everybody conform to this, because I do think it's better, not just for the football club, I think it's better for the supporters, whereby, I mean, we have systems now, for example's sake, if people want a pint of beer at half-time, before they go out, before the game, they can just go and use a machine and they tap it with their card. They get a ticket out and a number, and the drinks are waiting for them when they come out. And it's embracing technology to try and enhance the supporter experience.
Yeah. And I mean, I was just thinking there about you dealing with issues like this. I think this is your 18th year running the club. Is that right?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is.
Are you still enjoying it? I mean, do things get any easier with experience?
I love it. It's my life. And of course, it does get easier with experience. You know what you're doing more than ever, I guess, because it's second nature. There's probably things that we now do as a management team that we probably don't even realise just because we've done it for so long. And I'm fortunate enough to have a really good team around me. And, you know, it's an overused phrase, but it's very true. You are only as good as the people that are around you.
On a final note, I mean, last time we spoke, like I said, it was best part of a year ago. You got me pretty excited about behind-the-scenes documentary, which you sent me the trailer for. And I watched a few times back then. It was scheduled, last time I saw it was scheduled for release this year. But what's the latest around that documentary?
The latest is we've got 6 episodes ready to go. And it was due to be released on July the 21st. Unfortunately, there was some legal issues which have meant it's now been delayed, and it is scheduled now to be released in January. Very, very frustrating, because we've done a deal with a TV network. It's going out in over 200 countries. I think it's a fascinating watch. It's very gritty. It's very real. This is not a Disney movie like the Man City or the Spurs one. It's very similar to the Sunderland one, but perhaps a lot more dressing room access and a lot more access of the charming Mr. Barton as well.
Yeah, was that part of the conversation with Simon Grayson when you were interviewing him, saying, I'll promise I'll get rid of the cameras before.
No, not at all. I mean, the documentary was concluded by that. Simon was there. It's not part of his expectation, but I'm not sure it's part of his wish list either after his Sunderland experience.
I'm sure. And just out of interest, you said talking about what platform it'll be released on. So how will people be able to access that when it's eventually released?
Well, we've done a deal with a platform called DAZN. DAZN is big in the boxing and a really, really expanding TV platform, which I believe is part of the Freeview package. It's currently £1.99 a month. And we were starting to promote it. It was starting to be part of a joint venture. It was being advertised quite heavily, but sadly it was pulled just a few days before its release.
I'll look forward to that then. I just hope you enjoy your weekend. Maybe not so much the result, of course, but I hope it's a good game. Just want to say thank you very much, Andy.
It's been a pleasure, yeah.
Yeah, really appreciate your time. And all the best for the season ahead as well.
Yeah, and sincerely to you guys, it's probably one of my very, very favourite fixtures throughout the season. We're hosting Sunderland on Saturday. I've got to pinch myself to believe it's true, and I intend to enjoy it. So thank you for allowing me on the podcast, and good luck for the season.
Thanks again, Andy. Cheers.
A pleasure, Chris.
And thanks again, everyone, for listening. Keep a look out at Rugby Report for all the build-up ahead of the game against Fleetwood on Saturday. Also, keep an eye out in the usual places for the next podcast that should be dropping very soon. But from us, it's bye for now.
Thank you. Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.